This podcast was recorded Thursday, December 12th at 11:05 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like they'll come up with a better name for the new trade agreement than USMCA. It sounds like a Village People song, though.
It does. The USCMA. Anyway, let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at those snollygosters or crafty politicians who make Ohio politics so fun to talk about. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, our Snollygoster of the Week comes swaddled in a baby blanket.
First, though, while the impeachment process has most of Washington tied in knots, Congress and the White House were actually able to get something done. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and President Trump actually agreed on something, a new North American trade agreement.
There is no question, of course, that this trade agreement is much better than NAFTA.
That's going to be a great thing for our farmers, our manufacturers, for just about everybody. That's good for everybody, unions included.
The new agreement is called the USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, also known as NAFTA 2.0, the not-so-free NAFTA, Diet NAFTA, NAFTA Light, not Natty Light, Mike, I saw you looking at it. The un-NAFTA, if you will.
The un-NAFTA. While the president and many Democrats say they hated NAFTA, this really does not do a whole lot to change the basic premise of free trade across North America. But it does make some changes. It sets minimum wages for the components of car manufacturing at $16 an hour. It requires more North American steel be used in auto manufacturing. It better protects intellectual property in this digital age. The 1994 NAFTA, Steve, was so analog. And it opens up Canada to more U.S. dairy products.
So, how good is this deal? Republican Rob Portman of Ohio sounded excited about it on Fox News.
It's good for Ohio jobs. Farmers love it. Manufacturers love it. It's going to be good for auto workers in the United States.
Can't you just feel the excitement there, Steve?
That's Rob Portman just percolating.
All right. And Sherrod Brown seems to like it. And he hates every trade deal.
It's got to work for workers because, you know, this administration's betrayed workers virtually every time. And they tried to a NAFTA and we wouldn't let them. And so if the language is as good as people tell me it is, I would like to support it.
That's an endorsement from Sherrod Brown, I guess.
That's about as far as he goes on trade deals. In many ways, Ohio has been ground zero for the good and the bad of the 1994 NAFTA deal. Some parts of the economy really benefited from it. Others have suffered. To help us understand what this new deal means for Ohio, we turn now to Case Western University law professor Juscelino Colares, an expert on global trade. Professor Colares, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thank you for having me.
So we ran down some better names for the NAFTA replacement. What would you call it if you were able to name it?
Well, the first time I heard USMCA, I was listening, I think, to President Trump on TV, and he was saying, it's a good play on United States Marine Corps, USMC. So he says it should be USMCA and as an homage to the Marine Corps. And I found that hilarious. And so I got used to the name now because he definitely, the president definitely wanted to distinguish the agreement with the North American Free Trade Agreement. So I think he wanted to give his own imprint and doing it. A number of changes to the agreement and make it sure that people recognize it was his use of leverage that got things done.
Is it that much different than NAFTA, really?
Yes, it is. It basically ensures that in the long term, we're going to have a robust auto industry, auto manufacturing in North America, which means how do you do that? 87.5% regional content. An automobile will only get 0% tariff. The U.S. already has very low tariffs. We only get 0% tariff between Canada, United States, and Mexico if it has at least that content, 87.5%. And the national content needs to be at least 62.5%. So that basically protects, I think, labor. Labor should be extremely happy.
The president promises, Professor, that auto jobs will return to the United States because of this agreement. Is that going to happen, or will it more possibly protect current auto jobs from going to Mexico?
Well, that is currently happening. What you see in the United States is, the industry is adjusting. There are at least new pickup truck plants have opened since Trump became president. And a couple of U.S. small sedan plants have closed. So what this shows is obviously the writing is on the wall. The industry is recognizing with the United States becoming energy independent, the United States becoming a major, especially Ohio, major gas producer, that our being energy independent means that oil and fossil fuels are going to be fairly inexpensive compared to other countries for the long haul. So U.S. consumers will continue to prefer their SUVs and their pickup trucks. And I think industry is basically then adjusting to accommodate to consumer preference. So you see that already. But that doesn't mean that certain less profitable areas plants might not be closed, like as you saw in Lordstown, Ohio.
But you don't see pickup trucks being manufactured in Mexico versus the United States. There's more of an incentive to manufacture those trucks here under this agreement than there was under NAFTA, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, the big story here, the real big picture, 30,000 foot vision is the new agreement removes a gigantic source of business uncertainty. It keeps the United States clearly on track with its two largest partners, the parties with which it has, just imagine the United States and trade with Mexico and Canada is over $1 trillion. $1 trillion. It is more than double our $470 billion trade with China. We hear talk about China every day, but our market and one of the biggest geopolitical strategic advantages of the United States is we have few neighbors and we're surrounded by water on both sides. And by ensuring, by having a new North American agreement, we're basically consolidating, deepening our market, our borders, which are so important to the present, obviously, in our ability to preserve our economic way of living and flourish in a much more simplified, harmonized environment. The North American continent is guaranteed.
Some people have said that by requiring nearly a third to a half of all cars to be made by people making at least $16 an hour, prices are going to go up. Consumer trends, be what they will, are prices going to go up because of this new deal? If you have to build a car in Mexico where everyone there is getting paid $16 an hour, that means it costs more labor money for GM and Ford to build these trucks or to build these cars. The prices will likely go up, right?
Yes. I mean, you can make that argument. Absolutely. It seems like you can easily make the argument. At the same time, you have to look at a couple of things. Our tariffs with our European trade partners are only 2.5% on autos. So the fact that we have zero tariffs between Mexico and Canada and 2.5 with the Europeans means that the still car prices are very contestable prices, meaning the markets are very contestable when you have very low tariffs. So the price, the ability to basically determine price in a very competitive market on the part of the producer is fairly limited. What I do think that this does is this ensures that there is an industrial base, a long-term viable industrial base in the North American continent. An industrial base that was challenged. Countries before, seeing that there was only a 2.5% differential in terms of tariffs and with a lower domestic or origin content, they could basically start just sending parts to Mexico, and Mexico would be assembling, and then these cars were getting the zero tariff. Now, the president has increased that, and what he does is he's keeping his campaign promise, which is to bring more jobs and to maintain an environment that makes long-term planning on the part of manufacturers In terms of investment in North America.
So what you're saying basically is because the deal requires that 30% of the car now, perhaps 40% of the car in a few years, has to be made in North America, that correct. The supply chains will stay here. You won't be farming out the transmissions to China or the batteries to Vietnam or things like that.
Correct. What they have been able to do here is quite remarkable. They made sure that by keeping this domestic content high, the same phenomenon that happened when President Obama was president. I mean, it's a little anecdote, if I may. President Obama was at a dinner and Steve Jobs was present, and he says, you know, he turns to Steve Jobs' table and he asks him, why can't you make the iPhone? Why don't you just make the iPhone in America? And everybody, you know, everybody made comments about this, but nobody ever says that what Steve Jobs reputedly said, which was, I can't because the factories are not here. All the supply chain is all there. It's not here anymore. So what this deal does is ensure that a viable supply chain remains here.
We've talked a lot about manufacturing here. Let's pivot now to farming, another huge industry in Ohio. Commodity farmers, by and large, like NAFTA. Before the trade tariffs were imposed, Ohio farm exports to all countries had tripled since 2000. What would you say to farmers who might be looking at this new USMCA with kind of a side eye?
Oh, this is fantastic. It removes a big source of farmer or business uncertainty. Those markets are going to remain open for us. Corn, soy, pork bellies, all these big agricultural commodities are going to be, I mean, their markets are fine in Canada with a big advantage. I don't know if people know that Canada has one of the most government-administered and controlled dairy markets, or if you want to call it a market. Canadians were basically completely shutting down the bits of the dairy market where Wisconsin farmers, you know, can be competitive, which was in powdered and dried, dehydrated milk or dairy. And that stuff is now going to Canada. It's no longer President Trump and Ambassador Lighthizer secured that access was protected. Canada still maintains a very closed dairy market. They had tariffs that were around 300, 400 plus percent on our dairy. Now that more of our dairy products can get in, plus the other major agricultural commodities. So it's a very good deal.
One of the things that this new agreement does is we joke that NAFTA was so analog, the 1990s NAFTA was so analog. The digital economy has made, you know, huge strides since Bill Clinton was in his first term. What does this do briefly? What does this do for the digital economy? What does this trade agreement fix that NAFTA was not doing?
Well, NAFTA was silent on the data flows from each side of the border with both countries and among them too. What this agreement agrees is that countries will not impose barriers to the free flow of these electrons that basically carry the zeros and ones that constitute digital, which ensures that our supply chains can remain interlinked, which ensures that consumption of products through our servers, right? That the Netflixes of the world, right? The media, social media that we have, which are leading U.S. tech sectors in the world leading sector, the U.S. companies, that their future is assured, at least with respect to the North American continent. If you imagine that, I mean, if you actually were going to add up really significantly the biggest export the United States has, it's really culture. It is fashion. It is entertainment. It is movies. It is social media. If you all add all that in one bundle, it ensures that we have predictability in this environment. And it becomes the model for future trade agreements so that our parties, I mean, our counterparts in other countries now know that if they want to make a deal with us, they're going to have to, you know, be very flexible and open.
Case Western law professor Juscelino Colares, an expert on global trade, helping us understand the impacts of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. Professor, thanks again for joining Snollygoster.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. We should say the professor joined us by Skype.
He did. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week Award, which we give to the shrewdest politician or political move of the week.
All right. At the risk of being struck down by lightning as we sit.
A lot of good things start with that phrase.
We ask, can the baby Jesus be a Snollygoster? That's right. We are linking Jesus Christ to Snollygosters. Well, not really.
Kind of. We're not naming Jesus a Snollygoster, so that's a big difference. This week, a nativity scene appeared on the grounds of the Ohio State House on the West Plaza on government property.
Many a court battle has been fought over such displays, but the group that manages the State House says there is no church in state violation here because a private group took out a permit to have the display, the religious display, on state property. Because it is a private display, they say it is constitutional, no different than the group that puts up the menorah on State House grounds to celebrate Hanukkah.
Sure. Shrewd move, baby Jesus, or maybe more accurately, the group's Ohio Nativity Scene and Thomas More Society. Very shrewd, very calculating that you found a loophole in state regulation to help celebrate Christmas at the State House. So you are our Snollygosters of the Week.
All right. If you have a suggestion, a divine suggestion perhaps, for a Snollygoster of the Week, or any other feedback for our podcast, please send it to the email address snollygoster@wosu.org.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. Be sure to tune in next week. Mike has an exclusive interview with Governor DeWine about his first year in office. We'll feature that next week. Spread the word. Leave us a good review on iTunes. Tell your friends about us. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.